The Borrowers by Mary Norton. The world of the Borrowers is an exciting world of fantasy where a race of tiny people live. Their lives and escapades combine fantasy and reality in a captivating tale. It was an eye, or it looked like an eye, clear and bright like the colour of the sky. An eye like her own, but enormous. A glaring eye. Breathless with fear, she sat up, and the eye blinked. A great fringe of lashes came curving down and flew up again out of sight. Cautiously, Arietti moved her legs. She would slide noiselessly in among the grass stems and slither away down the bank. "Don't move," said a voice, and the voice, like the eye, was enormous, but somehow hushed and hoarse like a surge of wind through the grating on a stormy night in March. Arietti froze. "So this is it," she thought. "The worst and most terrible thing of all. I have been seen. Whatever happened to Eglantina will now, almost certainly, happen to me." There was a pause, and Arietti, her heart pounding in her ears, heard the breath again drawn swiftly into the vast lungs. "Or," said the voice, whispering still, "I shall hit you with my ash stick." Suddenly Arietti became calm. "Why?" she asked. How strange her own voice sounded, crystal thin and terrible clear. It tinkled on the air. "In case," came the surprised whisper at last, "you ran towards me, quickly, through the grass. In case," it went on, trembling a little, "you scrabbled at me with your nasty little hands." Arietti stared at the eye. She held herself quite still. "Why?" she asked again. And again the word tinkled. Icy cold it sounded this time, and needle sharp. "Things do," said the voice. "I've seen them. In India." Arietti thought of her gazetteer of the world. "You're not in India now," she pointed out. "Did you come out of the house?" "Yes," said Arietti. "From whereabouts in the house?" Arietti stared at the eye. "I'm not going to tell you," she said at last bravely. "Then I'll hit you with my ash stick." "All right," said Arietti. "Hit me." "I'll pick you up and break you in half." Arietti stood up. "All right," she said, and took 2 paces forward. There was a sharp gasp and an earthquake in the grass. He spun away from her and sat up, a great mountain in a green jersey. He had fair, straight hair and golden eyelashes. "Stay where you are," he cried. Arietti stared up at him. So this was the boy. Breathless, she felt, and light with fear. "I guessed you were about 9, she gasped after a moment. He flushed. "Well, you're wrong, I'm 10. He looked down at her, breathing deeply. "How old are you?" 14, said Arietti. "Next June," she added, watching him. There was silence while Arietti waited, trembling a little. "Can you read?" the boy said at last. "Of course," said Arietti. "Can't you?" "No," he stammered. I mean, I've just come from India." "What's that got to do with it?" asked Arietti. "Well, if you're born in India, you're bilingual. And if you're bilingual, you can't read. Not so well." Arietti stared up at him. What a monster, she thought, dark against the sky. "Do you grow out of it?" she asked. He moved a little and she felt the cold flick of his shadow. "Oh yes," he said. "It wears off. My sisters were bilingual. Now they aren't a bit. They could read any of those books upstairs in the schoolroom." "So could I," said Arietti quickly, "if someone could hold them and turn the pages. I'm not a bit bilingual. I can read anything." "Could you read out loud?" "Of course," said Arietti. "Would you wait here while I run upstairs and get a book now?" "Well," said Arietti, She was longing to show off. Then a startled look came into her eyes. "Oh," she faltered. "What's the matter?" The boy was standing up now. He towered above her. "How many doors are there to this house?" She squinted up at him against the bright sunlight. He dropped on one knee. "Doors," he said. "Outside doors?" "Yes." "Well, there's the front door, the back door, the gunroom door, the kitchen door, the scullery door, and the French windows in the drawing room." "Well, you see," said Arietti, "my father's in the hall by the front door, working. He wouldn't want to be disturbed."
"Working?" said the boy.
"What at?"
"Getting material," said Arietti, "for a scrubbing brush."
"Then I'll go in the side door." He began to move away, but turned suddenly and came back to her. He stood a moment, as though embarrassed, and then he said, "Can you fly?"
"No," said Arietti, surprised. "Can you?"
His face became even redder.
"Of course not," he said angrily. "I'm not a fairy."
"Well, nor am I," said Arietti. "Nor is anybody. I don't believe in them."
He looked at her strangely.
"You don't believe in them?"
"No," said Arietti. "Do you?"
"Of course not."
Really, she thought, he's a very angry kind of boy.
"My mother believes in them," she said, trying to appease him. "She thinks she saw one once. It was when she was a girl and lived with her parents behind the sand pile in the potting shed."
He squatted down on his heels and she felt his breath on her face.
"What was it like?" he asked.
"About the size of a glowworm, with wings like a butterfly. And it had a tiny little face," she said, "all alight and moving like sparks, and tiny moving hands.
Its face was changing all the time," she said, "smiling and sort of shimmery.
It seemed to be talking," she said, "very quickly, but you couldn't hear a word."
"Oh," said the boy, interested. After a moment, he asked, "Where did it go?"
"It just went," said Arietti. "When my mother saw it, it seemed to be caught in a cobweb. It was dark at the time. About 5 o'clock on a winter's evening, after tea."
"Oh," he said again, and picked up 2 petals of cherry blossom, which he folded together like a sandwich and ate slowly.
"Supposing," he said, staring past her at the wall of the house, "you saw a little man, about as tall as a pencil, with a blue patch in his trousers, halfway up a window curtain, carrying a doll's teacup. Would you say it was a fairy?"
"No," said Arietti. "I'd say it was my father."
"Oh," said the boy, thinking this out. "Does your father have a blue patch on his trousers?"
"Not on his best trousers. He does on his borrowing ones."
"Oh," said the boy again. He seemed to find it a safe sound, as lawyers do. "Are there many people like you?"
"No," said Arietti. "None. We're all different. I mean as small as you."
Arietti laughed. "Oh, don't be silly," she said. "Surely you don't think there are many people in the world your size."
"There are more my size than yours," he retorted.
"Honestly," began Arietti helplessly and laughed again. "Do you really think, I mean, whatever sort of a world would it be? Those great chairs, I've seen them. Fancy if you had to make chairs that size for everyone. And the stuff for their clothes, miles and miles of it, tents of it, and the sewing. And their great houses, reaching up so you can hardly see the ceilings. Their great beds, the food they eat, great smoking mountains of it, huge bogs of stew and soup and stuff."
"Don't you eat soup?" asked the boy.
"Of course we do," laughed Arietti. "My father had an uncle who had a little boat which he rolled round in the stockpot, picking up flotsam and jetsam. He did bottom fishing too for bits of marrow until the cook got suspicious through finding bent pins in the soup. Once he was nearly shipwrecked on a chunk of submerged shinbone. He lost his oars and the boat sprang a leak, but he flung a line over the pot handle and pulled himself alongside the rim. But all that stock, fathoms of it, and the size of the stock pot. I mean, there wouldn't be enough stuff in the world to go round after a bit. That's why my father says it's a good thing they're dying out. Just a few, my father says. That's all we need to keep us. Otherwise, he says, the whole thing gets... Arietti hesitated, trying to remember the word. Exaggerated, he says. What do you mean? Asked the boy. To keep us.